Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes, here I am. How many of you grilled last night? Even if it was cold and windy, did you stand there and put extra wood on the fire? I didn't. I had a kid thing at school. It was Somali culture night, so I was eating sambusas in the gym. Super fun night, but I would have liked some grilling. I would have liked that very much. But all right, so I'm going to get my fix vicariously through Emma Frisch. So she really likes camping and glamping, and she's got this new book that's all about outdoor cooking. It is called Feast by Firelight. Doesn't that sound good? So this year, the backyard, the campsite, the fire, it's all very on trend. Everybody is sick of being inside looking at their screens. We want to go outside and not look at our screens. And Emma has the strategies. Emma, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Oh, thanks for being here. Okay, so I love your book. It's so pretty. Makes being outside look really cool. Were you always an outside person? How did you turn into an outside cooking person?
Yeah, I really have always been an outside person. I'm actually standing on a trail right now, too.
You are? You're talking to us from like...
I am, and I promise there's service on this trail, and lots of birds breathing.
Oh, so where are you, physically?
I live in Ithaca, New York, and our house is right near downtown Ithaca, and it's also right near this... it's a recway, so it was an old train station that's converted into a trail system that weaves between all these waterfalls and gorges. It's absolutely beautiful.
Oh, very cool. And so did you grow up there in Ithaca?
I didn't. I grew up in Connecticut. My parents are Italian and British, and they actually met in the States. My and I were all born here. We grew up, you know, whether it was in the garden or on a trail, being outside as much as possible. We were the kind of family that wasn't really allowed to watch TV, didn't have Nintendo except for a week when we all fought over it. And then my dad said, all right, that's it. It's going. And so we just, you know, we built these kingdoms in the woods and made chocolate out of mud. And then as I got older and learned to actually cook, I loved cooking outside as much as possible and took that into different realms of my life as an outdoor guide and a rock climber and now the owner of a glamping hotel.
A glamping hotel. So explain to America, what is a glamping hotel?
All right. Well, glamping is a mashup of glamorous camping, and it's not a new concept. It's been around for centuries in nomadic cultures where people live in tents that are furnished and, you know, they put carpeting down and make themselves comfortable. But what we're mostly familiar with is safari in Africa. And so in the U.S., this is a fairly new idea. And generally, it's a temporary structure. We use safari tents, but other people use yurts or different styles of tents, like bell tents that actually look like more like a teepee.
I've seen those.
Yeah, they're beautiful. So, and we fully furnish them. We have king and queen beds and a writing desk and a leather armchair and rocking chairs on the porch that face the woods.
What makes it camping? So obviously you've got electricity somehow, right? So what makes it camping? Just flimsy walls?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. Actually, most of our tents are off the grid. So most of our tents do not have electricity, which is a choice we made because we do really want to help people unplug. Some do in our lobby area, which has a full bar as well. But what makes it camping is that the flimsy walls, I think, is really the key, because you feel, you know, you hear the rain on the canvas, and you hear the birds and the coyotes, and you wake up and the sun is streaming through the mesh. So there's this, you're very close to nature in a way that people aren't used to when they're sleeping inside walls or a hotel.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay, and so then you have this glamping. So do people just come to you and they're like, I've never camped. This is my bridge. This is how I'm going to turn myself from a indoor cat into an outdoor cat?
Yeah, a lot of people, yes. So a lot of the people who come are couples, and one of them is a diehard camper and the other one has always refused to go. And so this is their compromise.
Oh, my God. That was me at one point. So I grew up in New York City, and my college boyfriend is a, you know, good Minnesotan. I wanted to go camping. It was the first time I ever went camping in my life. And I ended up just going and sitting in the car. Like, I couldn't handle it. I was like, it's so crazy. Like, the wind and the raccoons and everything. And it was so cold. Ugh.
Yeah, peeing in the woods, all of it. Yeah, that's totally. So it is a bridge. And then also for families, it's great, especially with young children, because they often want to get their kids outside, but it's a hassle to set everything up. And a lot of people who come just, they want to camp, but they don't want to invest in the gear because it's so expensive and they only go once or twice a year.
It is a lot of gear. It's a lot of stuff. Like, I just packed my little dude for the middle school camping trip, and it was, even just for two nights, it was so much stuff.
Yeah, I know. I have a whole room dedicated to camping gear.
You do?
I do.
I guess that makes sense.
It's pretty elaborate, but...
All right, so you have this glamping hotel, and then you thought, you know, America is in a glamping space. I'm put it in a book, which I love. I feel like it's very on trend right now. People are really, I feel like we've had it with screens. Like, I'm waiting for the new hippies to arise, because I'm just seeing just tremors of it everywhere, and your book is one of them. So let's talk about a fire, like a big fire. It's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's the core of it for me. It's just this idea of getting around the fire. And, you know, it's a space that's actually, my husband and I own our hotel together. That's actually how we started dreaming of it, around a fire, because it was this place where people come together and they connect with nature and with each other and with themselves. And often there's food involved, whether it's marshmallows or something more elaborate. So the book actually... It came about, I've wanted to write a cookbook for 10 years, and I've probably written at least 10 proposals. And so the latest proposal I'd written, I just kept writing them, like trying to shop them around. And the latest one was about wild foraging and how to incorporate that into food. Mm-hmm. And the agent that I met, who's a dear friend, said, well, why don't we spin this into fire cooking? Because that's what you've been doing at Firelight. And then we connected with 10 Speed Press, who published the book. And they said, well, cooking over fire is great, but it's intimidating for a lot of people. Let's take it back to the basics and, you know, make it accessible for a camp stove and a grill. And that actually felt more aligned with the way that I'd been cooking as well. So this book is really an entry for anybody who wants to cook outside, whether in the backyard or on a camping trip. And there's all sorts of tools to help people do that, like how to pack, you know, your kitchen and how to pack the cooler and menu planners for different types of weekends. So it's really meant to be, you know, a simple way to kind of get into that realm and get off your screen and get together and eat outside.
Yeah, and the backyard bonfire has always been a staple, but I feel like it's getting more, people are feeling it even more because it's such a good thing to get everybody from the neighborhood or, you know, just to gather around that focal point.
Yeah, and there's a ritual to it. I think everyone, whether we know it or not, feels tapped into this ancient primal experience because, you know, fire is so unique to humans. Cooking over fire is even more unique to us. And it's really a ceremony, creating that fire together and being around it and just kind of letting time stop.
Yeah, we've had I had an evolutionary biologist on the show once who was so interesting, and he's made a case really persuasively that man is the cooking animal, and I mean man and woman, but like we get so much more, if we were just sitting around eating banana leaves, you don't get a lot of nutrition out of that, but as soon as you're making a stew, you're grilling everything your weenie roast. You get so much more accessible food out of that. And there is something, you know, that you can just watch a fire for hours. The only thing I've ever found that rivals the power of looking at a fire is looking at a newborn. Like, those are the two things where you can just look
gosh.
At them.
Yeah. That is so true. I'm actually pregnant with our second, so we'll be able to do both at the same time in September.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so you're on a trail, pregnant, talking about fire. That's a good that's a good place to be. Well, congratulations.
Good visual.
So
what are
some favorite things at an entry level, if someone is just sort of like, I want to do that, but it sounds like so much, what are your kind of gateway firelight feast items?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. There's a bunch. One for the carnivorous folk listening is fire-licked skirt steak with mama's salsa verde. And the skirt steak is one of the easiest cuts of meat to grill. And it, you know, it's fast, it's almost always tender, and there's not much you have to do to it. You just season it with salt and pepper. And then the sauce that you prepare ahead of time, which is a parsley and olive oil and garlic-based sauce, just you whip everything up together in the blender, pop it in a jar, and bring it with you to slap on the meat. So it's super simple, really tasty, and just such a great way to sort of get into cooking over fire, either over a grill or putting a grate over a campfire.
I love that. I have a friend who's a very big, big fancy wine guy, and he literally bought the house that he bought because it had a fireplace with a grill in it so he could make steak.
That's amazing.
Because that is a delicious thing.
Yes.
Oh, I bought myself this fancy, like, wiener stick that's called a roller roaster. I haven't busted them out yet this year, but I bought them in the dead of winter when I was just like, something, spring, I have to, impulse purchase on the internet. And it's like this telescoping metal antenna stick kebab thing, but it comes out of a wooden handle, so it's safe for the kids. And then my vision is that I'm going to put a hot dog on that, and it's going to put it in the fire, because that is underrated, a little fire roasted hot dog. That's a
good
thing.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, does it?
I'm curious, what are some of the things that you love to cook on the grill?
Oh, well, I just am, you know, I have my very elaborate rituals, which are I have a big old maple tree, and things are constantly falling out of the maple tree. I gather the windfall wood and I let it dry out, and then so I make a big fire, and then I, you know, put the corn over that so it gets really burned. That's how it's good. And then kind of, you know, move it over to the side so then it just continues to cook. And then I, you know, once everything is died down, then I cook whatever meat I'm going to do over that. So, but I've got my very, like, you've got to have a ridiculously hot fire. Then you put the corn on it. Then you scoot everything over.
Yum. I love it. I actually, you know, burning food over fire is also underrated. And there's a couple recipes in the book there's like burnt broccoli mac and cheese and charred bread, but that, I feel like that burnt black crispy outer part that you get when you cook over fire is so unique to cooking in that experience, and so good.
It is. My dad's been dead for many decades, but one of the things I remember about him is he used to love to just set the marshmallow in there, get it completely on fire, pull the, you know, blow it out, then pull the black char off, and then start right over.
I would have liked him. That's how I like my marshmallows, too.
I know. My kids are very careful. They like to keep it very much at the edge so that it just starts to kind of soften but never gets too char. It's like, I guess a grown-up taste. One day you like scotch and burned marshmallows, and that's it.
Black coffee. Exactly.
Oh, and so you have a little one. That's the hardest thing when you have a toddler, to keep them away from the fire.
Yeah, that was actually, I've been over the past month before the book was coming out, I was sharing behind the scenes pictures, and there's more coming, but almost all of the ones I took are trying to keep she's now two, but she was, when I was testing all the recipes, you know, in between one and one and a half, and just all over the place. So there's pictures of me, you know, holding her while I'm dumping a whole chimney of coals, and It was definitely a challenge writing the book with the little one.
Yeah, having I think home. When I had my people were little, that age, that little, like, they don't know what danger is, older toddler age, I broke so many wine glasses because I would just be like, okay, I'm going to sit down. And the next thing I know, I'm just dashing to rescue a child. And there goes a wine glass. You know, you kick it over or something onto the brick. So, those were the tough years. It's
better than
now. My kids are very, you know, intuitive and they know about fire. And so they grow out of that. But it's fun to be in life and to have that. I really worry about so many screens. You're in it now. It's so, you know, it's so easy to give them a screen. But what do they learn from a screen except how to be more on screens?
Yeah. Oh, my. I mean, this is one of the biggest conversations my husband and I have, because it is, it's hard. Like, we're on our screens. You know, we use them to talk and email, and we try not to be on them around her. But as soon as she sees it, it's like, you know, I want to see a picture. You're taking a picture of me. Of course, it's only fair that I get to see it.
Yes.
And then it just spirals. And it's just so tricky balancing that in this modern world. That just wasn't, it didn't exist, you know, for us.
Yeah.
So
And I know I'm right there. And so I work on screens. I do all these things. And yet I'm still telling the kids, like, oh, all that screens teach you is how to be more on screens. And then it's true. And yet, you know, it's still very sticky or magnetic or whatever it is. You're still right there in front of them. But you can always go somewhere and have a fire and look at it. I can hear birds. It's so sweet. So
it's actually not raining, too. So.
Oh,
just a light drizzle.
All right. Well, thank you for this book. I just love it. It is Emma Frisch's Feast by Firelight. And it's a good, it's on trend. Everybody's going to have to, we're all going to go outside and eat by the fire. That's going to be good.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad. And I can't wait to hear what you cook out of the book.
Oh, me too. All right. You have a good one.
You too. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Isn't that fun? All right. When we come back, I don't know what we're going to do. We're not going to do recipes because I didn't make it onto the internet. Maybe I'll just answer questions. Find me on the Twitter bot. You got any questions? I am at Dear Dara. Or find me on the Facebook. I am Dara.Grumdahl. And I will answer any questions you got. I got a couple lined up in the queue, but I have room for more. Dara here. All right. So I got a little insider information for all of you off the menu heads, right? Is that what we call ourselves? I think it must be. So you, if you're a diehard listener, you have heard Sean Sherman goes by the Sous Chef, S-I-O-U-X, on here multiple times, right? We had him on, to talk about different things he's done, and especially for his cookbook, The Sous Chef, which we love. We've had him on. We love that he's bringing back native foodways. We love that he has championing our local ingredients. We also have had Beth Dooley on the show. She's a classic. I think we've probably had her half a dozen times. Well, guess what happened last night? Beth Dooley and Sean Sherman wrote that Sous Chef book together, awarded by the James Beard Awards, biggest, you know, the Oscars of food, cookbook of the year. So hooray for us. Hooray for all of us who have been caring about wild rice and choke cherries and all the things we care about on this show. Guess who also now has recognized all of us and our awesomeness? Yeah, the whole world. So that happened last night. So hooray for Sean Sherman. Hooray for Beth Dooley. Hooray for me. Hooray for everybody who has cared about this stuff and who has nurtured our Minnesota foods, our local indigenous foods. I couldn't be more proud. I couldn't be more thrilled. Isn't that great? Isn't it great? So you definitely heard it here first. No one has heard more about it than you. So hooray, you trendsetters. We did it. We brought that. All right, let's see. Let's answer some of your questions. What are some of the questions I got? Oh, pertaining to the toddlers destroying wine glasses part of the segment, I got a question about wanting to upgrade summer wine glass scene. And what advice do I have? All right, so two things. those plastic wine glasses that look like the top of a wine glass, those are not bad, but they have to be hand washed. And then at that point that you have to hand wash something, I'm not sure what you're even, you know, why the plastic is the advantage. I mean, I know that it's so that it can get blown off the picnic table and bounce instead of break. So I actually think I like the glass, the ones that look like the top of the wine glass, but they're made of glass and they're a little heavy. And then I like those, and they can go in the dishwasher. But another option is to just pop down to IKEA, and they have some nice wine glasses for $1.99. And then if you break them, they're almost disposable. So I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to be a classy wine drinker in the summer. The reason I like the actual stems on the glasses is because it keeps it away from your hands. Your hand is hot. It's the summer. If you're holding the actual glass, the whole thing starts to get kind of steamy. I don't know. Those are my thoughts. I think for your backyard, make your backyard drinking good. I think, you know, the one thing about the stem with the wine glass is it kind of whole thing works together like a sail on a clipper ship. So it just catches the breeze and blows off the table. All right, I got one more question, then we'll take a break and come back and do some more. Brenda has asked me via the Facebook, what is the logic? Why are those pickles supposed to be good for you? What is the logic? Why is everyone with the lacto-fermented pickles? She didn't say that. She just said, why are pickles good for you? I think she means the whole sauerkraut, kimchi, lacto-fermented. Okay, so what do these words mean? So these pickles are being pickled not by the action of vinegar, but by the action of friendly bacteria. The friendly bacteria get into your microbiome and they help you out. They help you digest food. They perhaps crowd out bad bacteria. So this is the logic behind yogurt. This is the logic behind all of these kind of good ferments. So that's it. It's two things. Supposed to help your digestion and crowd out the bad guys. So you're bringing in the good guys to crowd out the bad guys. And those are the two ideas behind all of these fermented foods that are so on trend. All right, you got more questions for me? Text me. We got the text line up, 81807. And I'll come back and I will answer those texts. Yes, Dara here. All right, I got a question on the text line. What's my favorite Minneapolis restaurant to eat at the bar? Oh, you know where I'm really feeling? St. Genevieve. St. Genevieve, it's right off 50th and Bryant. It's on Bryant, right off 50th, kind of by Lake Harriet, near the creek. And so many things I love about this place. First of all, it just looks like a million bucks. Second, it's got a great wine list, great champagne list, possibly the city's best champagne list. Like, it's up there. And then it's got just all kinds of good little snacks. But it's one of those places you sit there and you just feel like a million bucks. You feel like you're in this French bistro. It's the center of the world. A lot of people think you can't get into St. Genevieve, but I find that you can. Though maybe I just ruined that. I've found it, you know, it's a little hard to get in there at like 7 o'clock on Friday. But at all other times and during the day, it's quite lovely. And it's got this kind of Art Deco, contemporary, white, Parisian feeling. It's so slick. I love it. But I feel like we get a little intimidated in the Twin Cities about getting into restaurants and thinking that they're harder to get into than they are. Somebody the other day was just like, I went to Spoon and Staple and I just got right in and I sat at the bar. It's like, yeah, you can do that. That's actually, you know, aside from that 6:30 to, you know, 7:45 on a Friday or Saturday, you can pretty much get in everywhere. We need to be less intimidated. All right, I got a question from somebody who wants to do some better grilling and they want a one stop. They don't want to have to run around and do stuff. You know what I love? Casetta's, downtown St. Paul. You can get sausages and you can get, you know, everything. You can get the red sauce and the little appetizers for the side, your olives, everything. You can get a garlic bread in a tinfoil bag and just throw that whole thing into the grill. Yes, I like Casetta's very much. All right, next week, it's all about how those fancy new greenhouses, how do they work? We're going to have the people that run the Revol greenhouse. I'm very curious about how the energy equation works. Like, where does the heat come from? Is there enough sun? I want to know. Until then, I hope you have a very, very tasty week. And may all your ribs on the grill turn out tender and your courage stay tough.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.